You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24, where we continue to break down the moves of the offseason. I am Mo Mutsi. Alongside me, as always, now is the one and only GM extraordinaire, Mr. Scott Perry. Scotty P, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, Mo. As always, good to be on with you.
Yes, sir.
Looking forward to breaking down the next one.
That's right. And we gave you guys the preview yesterday. Today, we're breaking down Paul George signing a four-year, $212 million deal with the Philadelphia 76ers. And this one was interesting because if you remember way back to when James Harden played for the Sixers, and he was going on his off-season tour of China, and he said Daryl Morey's a liar, and he demanded a trade. He said he wanted to go to the Clippers. I think on this show, I need to find a clip, but I said what would be really funny is if Harden forces his way to the Clippers, and one of the guys from the Clippers ends up leaving and going to Philly with the cap space that they've got now. So, you know, James Harden is the architect of his own demise by allowing Philadelphia to create that cap space and then go into the Clippers only to lose maybe his second-best teammate in Paul George. How about that, Scott?
Hey, the ironies of life, Mo. That's all I could say. You just never know in this business. And I say that all the time. Look, there's only 30 teams in the league. And then every summer, there's only a handful of teams that have space. So you don't know who it is. And it's a musical chairs kind of thing. And Paul ended up playing musical chairs and sitting in Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
Go figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. And now the Philadelphia 76ers have a formidable big three of Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, and Paul George. Interesting that, you know, you've got Embiid, who famously has not been past the second round in the playoffs. And you've got Paul George, who's had a couple good seasons in the playoffs. However, for the most part of his career, he's known as a player whose performance drops a little bit in the postseason. We saw that this season for the Clippers with no Kawhi Leonard for some of those games in the first round. He didn't really elevate his game to a place necessary for him to take over for his team to lead them to a victory. So we're going to see if combining those two leads to any success. But I'm a big fan of Tyrese Maxey. But what was your initial thought when you heard that Paul George was going to the Sixers?
First of all, let me just break down the basketball part of it. From a basketball fit, it makes total sense. The Sixers were in dire need of a two-way wing player who could be a legitimate scoring threat and defensive presence on the wing in the tough Eastern Conference, where there are a lot of good wings. And the champions, your Boston Celtics, Mo, have the two best wings on one team. So great fit. I think from a basketball standpoint, he's going to be able to play off of both Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. There's a lot of two-man game options with any of those three, really. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting from that standpoint if you're a Philadelphia 76ers fan. And again, just from a purely basketball standpoint, I do believe as the year was unfolding, you know, as much as I know that Paul George wanted to stay in Los Angeles, you kind of got the feel that this could happen because they weren't, you know, cementing the deal throughout the season for him to stay there. So it's going to be really interesting to watch. But from a basketball sense, it made total sense from Philadelphia's perspective. I get it. Congratulations to them. To your point now, the pressure's on, though. You know, you won the first part short of a conference finals, probably making it eventually to a finals during the life of his contract, then people may look at it differently. But that's where we're at right now.
I think the moment everyone knew that this would happen was during the NBA finals when ESPN had Joel Embiid and Paul George on the panel at the same time during a game. And there was a little glance from Joel Embiid to Paul George when they talked about the future of the Sixers. So let's just finish talking about the basketball fit before we dive into the negotiations and how the process of how all these things work. I like what the Sixers have done because you've got Maxey, who is a star, emerging star point guard. And then you've got Kelly Oubre, Paul George, and now Caleb Martin, who chose less money to be with the Sixers than to stay with the Miami Heat. And I just read the quote from him where he said he wants to be part of a winning culture. And I've never seen a player turn down Heat culture for the not getting past the second round culture. Yeah. So maybe they are building something special this year. And then, of course, at the five, you've got the MVP and perennial all-star Joel Embiid. So in terms of switchability on the perimeter, when you look at going up against a team like the Celtics with Oubre, George, and Martin, that's a nice little three. You could switch two through four. And Tyrese Maxey is a great athlete. He's got great speed. He could somewhat elevate his defense to hold his own there. And then, of course, Joel Embiid, one of the best rim protectors in the NBA and an elite big on the defensive side of the ball. And then off the bench, you've got Jared McCain, who they just drafted. They managed to sign Eric Gordon and Andre Drummond to come off their bench. And I think when you saw those signings, being announced, you knew they were going to get Paul George, because those kind of complementary pieces you only take when you know that there's a star coming towards you. So what do you make of this roster as a whole? And do you think they can finally beat the Demons of the second round?
Mo, you're going into my wheelhouse now when you start talking about the additional signings to the, you know, in addition to the big trade. I mean, I really like the addition of Caleb Martin. You know, he may not be the household name or the all-star, but that guy plays hard every single night. We've seen him guard multiple positions on the perimeter and was part of that Heat team that made that improbable run to the finals just a couple of seasons ago.
He caught fire against my Boston Celtics in that conference finals. Yeah. I will never forget Caleb Martin.
You won't. Exactly. I know you won't, Mo. Exactly. But I thought that was an excellent signing now to put him alongside Paul George. They re-signed Kelly Oubre. So now you have a formidable wing contingent who can defend and do some things offensively for you as well. And then, look, Eric Gordon, I know he's getting up there in age, but he provides some very solid scoring off the bench, another three-point shooter, playoff experience. I like that signing. And I thought the real under-the-radar one was bringing Andre Drummond back to Philadelphia. I thought they were going to even try to get him last year at the trade deadline. But getting him back, you need some size behind Joel Embiid. Look, Joel Embiid is not going to play 82 games in a regular season. We know that. He's going to sit out, you know, 15 to 20, 25 games probably for a variety of reasons. So having that big body in there. Now, of course, Andre Drummond is not the offensive player that he is, but he still provides some defensive presence. He rebounds. He's still a great rebounder in this league. And I think his contributions and his additions was a sneaky good move for the Sixers. So they're in position now to compete with not only the Celtics, but also the New York Knicks. So I like the basketball team, you know, what it's shaping up to be. You got a championship coach in Nick Nurse. He's the only one, I believe, this involved who has a championship. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the unique thing now. You know, we made a lot of the addition of Jrue Holiday last year coming in as a champion, helping guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown get over the hump to become champions. You don't have that in Philadelphia. Paul George is coming over now. He's played in three conference finals, I believe, two with the Pacers and one with the Clippers. Joel Embiid's never been there. Tyrese Maxey's never been there. And Caleb Martin has at least been to a final. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, who's going to take that leadership role and helping these guys get over that hump. To first, they got to get, you know, get to the conference finals, but hopefully for their sake, how do they get to the finals? So who's going to, you know, they're going to have to learn that together as a group, really, to be able to get there. So it'll be interesting to watch that whole process play out.
It's interesting. And I like the ironic pun of the process that you have going on there, Scott, because it's been a long time coming that they've been building this team. You know, just go back to what we said at the very start and how funny the basketball world is. The Sixers fans always talk about that game seven against the Raptors, you know, where they lost to Kawhi on the buzzer. And the thing that stands out is Embiid played all but a minute and 42 seconds of that game, I believe. And Greg Monroe came in to that game for just a minute and 42 seconds and was a -9 in terms of plus minus. Now they have his former Detroit Pistons front court partner, because those two were the guys that the Pistons were trying to build around. Hilariously, if you think back at it, the Pistons were trying to build around Monroe and Drummond. Now they've got his partner Drummond as the backup for Embiid, and we'll see what his backup plus minus is, because a lot of teams in the NBA do suffer when their stars sit on the bench. And especially for a player with the durability of Joel Embiid, having someone who can just be even a net neutral in those, even if it's just right. 1 or 2 minutes in a game seven, can be the difference in winning or losing a game that goes down to the buzzer. So that's going to be interesting. In terms of the fit in, I guess, the locker room, Paul George obviously holds himself in high regard, and he should. He's been an all-star in this league, and he's been a great player throughout his career. But you kind of look at it as, after Harden's departure, Maxey really stepped up as the guy. Obviously, Embiid is cemented as the number one option, but Maxey was then the guy who you saw those huge shots he hit in the playoffs as well, like one from damn near half court at the end of the game. Now with Paul George in the mix, do you think that alters the chemistry of the locker room in any way?
I'm sure it's going to alter it a little bit, Mo, but look, when you talk Philadelphia 76ers, it's still going to start and end with Joel Embiid. This guy has been the MVP in the league. There's been a ton of expectations placed upon him, and he has them for himself. So the microscope is still going to be broadly and firmly focused in on him, what he can do, because like he said in that interview, you know, trying to, you know, was hoping that the team was able to do something to get better, to improve the roster. Well, guess what? The team has gone out and done that. They brought you Paul George. They brought you the other three guys we just talked about in free agency. So your roster, at least on paper, as long as everybody's healthy, appears to be better. So now, Joel Embiid, you got to do two things. You got to figure out a way how to stay healthy, and then you got to figure out a way how to grow in a leadership capacity to help push your team to these heights that you expected upon yourself, and the Philadelphia fan base is going to expect of you. And that's, at minimum, in my opinion, a conference finals this season, at minimum, if not making it all the way to the finals.
As a Celtics fan, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm more worried about the New York Knicks than I am about the Philadelphia 76ers heading into this season in terms of competition in the Eastern Conference. Would you agree with that sentiment?
I would agree with you definitely, because the Knicks have what the 76ers are going to have to work towards establishing this year, and that is cohesion. They've got a group of guys that have their core guys in Randall and Brunson, the Villanova guys that were there together last year, Hart, DiVincenzo. Now you add another one in Bridges. Bridges coming in will be like he's been there the whole time, even though he hadn't played with the guys all the time. But from a fit, personality fit, and game fit, I think he's going to fit seamlessly. And OG, as we saw last year coming over in December when he was traded there, he fits seamlessly as well. You know, Mitchell Robinson, you get him back. He's been, you know, he's the grizzled veteran of that Knicks locker room in terms of longevity with the team of 6 years. So those guys know one another. They know Tibbs, the coach who's been there a long time. So there's a lot of continuity there that they have that's going to work in their favor, in my opinion. So again, their big thing is going to be staying healthy as well. But I always tend, as you know, Mo, to favor a group that's been together, it's been battle-tested. They've had, you know, they've experienced highs and lows together, figured out how to overcome them, fight through them, through disappointments, and again, and understand how to help one another. And from all appearances, look like they get along very well, both on and off the floor. So I would give the Knicks, I would agree with you, I'd give the Knicks the advantage in that capacity.
So let's talk a bit about these contract negotiations, because Paul George went on his podcast and he kind of gave an insight to the fans by telling his side of the story as to what the offers were from the Clippers, because obviously they wanted to keep him. And, you know, it would make sense given that he went to the Clippers to play with Kawhi Leonard in a trade that involved Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and a whole host of picks, which is maybe very damaging for the future of the Clippers, because this has been a spectacular failure. They traded away their best young player and their future to not win anything at all. And Kawhi never seems to be healthy in the playoffs. And Paul George has had health issues. And this season, they were approaching the offseason with three players in Leonard, George, and Harden, who were in the latter stages of their career, who were all impending free agents. And the negotiations were interesting because Kawhi got his deal. He didn't get the max of what he wanted, right? What was the max they could have given? 4 years, $220 million or something?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right? But he took a three-year deal, or am I mistaken on that?
No, three-year deal. Three years, 150, I believe.
Yeah. So $50 million a year. And basically, Paul George wanted the same deal as Kawhi Leonard, which is interesting because we just spoke about Klay Thompson yesterday, and Klay Thompson wanted the same deal as Draymond Green. Scott, in your experience as a GM, how does this factor into when you're negotiating a contract with a player, the impact it will have on their teammates and how they're perceived?
Well, you know, again, great question. As I look at this Clipper situation, first of all, and you've heard me say this many times, sitting in these chairs and making these decisions are difficult. So the Sixers, and how I looked at this situation, they made a calculated, educated decision to say, okay, we're going to go after Paul George. We're going to give up a lot of assets to get him. You know, obviously went out and got, you know, after getting Kawhi Leonard as a free agent. And we're going to attach our fortunes to these two guys and say, okay, this is going to get us into the NBA Finals and give us our best chance to win a championship. Giving away Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as well with all those picks. And if you had a crystal ball to know how things would work out, obviously they wouldn't be able to do it. Yeah. They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't make that deal. But we don't have crystal balls. So I had no problem with any time a team goes in like they went in to go get two great players and say, okay, here's our time, here's our window. Let's go try to get it. Now, with that said, to me, the biggest decision, but also the player dynamic is that, okay, Paul George, you know, you go ahead and take care of Kawhi Leonard, all right? And now you got Paul George who's sitting there. Now you have to make a decision. To me, what looks like a somewhat of a financial decision as well. They're basically what they're saying in not keeping Paul George is that we're not good enough. You know, we saw this for 5 years, basically, you know, even this past year with James Harden, we're not good enough to get to the finals. So why put ourselves, continue to stay in the luxury tax, pay this heavy bill and pay him a three or four year deal? Like I said, that's probably why, in my estimation, they went with the 2 year option to say, okay, we'll try to keep it, you know, make something happen in these next 2 years, but they didn't want to lock themselves up. And then I also read the report that he wanted a no trade clause, was a non-starter for them being the Clippers, because again, they may have gone the third year. They may have gone, because if it doesn't work, they know they probably could have moved him somewhere else.
Yep.
Begin their rebuilding efforts. So,
it's interesting that Steve Ballmer, the richest owner in the NBA, you would expect that he doesn't mind paying the luxury tax, but there comes even a point for him where he doesn't like wasting his money, and they've just built a new arena. And with James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, they'll still be able to sell out seats, still be able to sell jerseys. I don't think Paul George being there or not makes that huge difference, respectfully, to Paul George. But what he said on his podcast is the first initial deal was 2 years, $60 million, and that was in October time. So they offered him $30 million a year for 2 years. And then it went up and up to the point where they could get up to $44, $45 million per year. And he wasn't really keen on doing that. He was looking for something around the $50 million mark that Kawhi Leonard got. And he heard that they were going to give it to Kawhi. And he said, give me what Kawhi got. You view us as the same. We came here together. We want to finish this together. But I don't think Paul George realizes that Kawhi Leonard is an NBA champion, a finals MVP. And he holds a little bit more weight in these negotiations. Because when Kawhi Leonard is healthy, the Clippers look like one of the best teams in the league. If you remember that stretch earlier this year where he was healthy, he was shooting you know, 50% from the field and 45% from 3-point line. And the Clippers were making this huge run and everyone was talking about them as serious contenders. And just when he wasn't healthy, it's obviously not the same. So all of those negotiations happened before the All-Star break. And he didn't want to have any more conversations after that. He wanted to play the rest of the year out. So now he's going into negotiations and he said he wants the 3 years, $150 million that Kawhi Leonard got, but he wanted, he presented to them 3 years, $150 million with a no trade clause, because in the meeting, they said that they want him here long term and they want him to be a Clipper for the rest of his career. And he said, okay, put your money where your mouth is and give me the no trade clause if that's what you really believe. Mm-hmm. So after they said no to that, he said, okay, 4 years, $212 million. Give me my money. And they said no. And so he went over to the Sixers. So my question to you is, Scott, in these negotiations, he obviously said, let's play the rest of the season out and then we'll come back to this. And how do you kind of play that game with a player or their representation if that it's a massive gulf between 2 years, $60 million and 4 years, $212 million? How do you as a GM find that midpoint that you'd be happy with and know when it's time to walk away from the table?
Mo, I've always believed that a good negotiation, you obviously got to be a very good listener to what the other side, the player's side wants. And then you obviously, on the other end, you have to totally understand where you're trying to go and what your limit is on keeping that player. And so finding that middle ground is where I always tried to work to get to. Now, if you sense during the negotiation that the other side is just not going to budge regardless of whatever, then you got to be able to prepare to move on. You always have to, in my opinion, there's got to be a point where you're prepared to move on. And whether that's from the player side or the team side, obviously in this case, I think you had both. That were, you know, had their point. You can't get too emotionally caught up in the things. You know, look, man, you get close to some of your players and your team and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, both sides understand that it's a business. Paul George and his representation is going to try to, you know, do the very best for him financially. I believe in this calculation, the Clippers, you know, we're dealing with a young man who's from Los Angeles. They know that he really, in his heart, wanted to stay home. And so they probably were weighing that heavily on their side, that meaning the Clippers, in terms of the negotiation, saying, okay, well, this guy really wants to stay, so we can hold firmer, because when it all's said and done, he's going to want to end up in L.A. some kind of way. And then, like I was just saying, but Paul George ultimately in his representation said, yeah, okay, we may really want to stay home, but if we're not going to get anywhere close to what they believe was fair, which they thought was at minimum the Kawhi Leonard deal, then we got to be prepared to walk to Philadelphia. You have Philadelphia, who has full cap space, full max space for 4 years. I will decide to go move and go to Philadelphia and do that. And I think that's what you saw play out here. But it's a fascinating thing. Those are one of the things that I do miss, Mo, because I've always felt pretty good and strong about at least my ability to communicate and understand the situation from all sides. I think the best negotiations when both sides understand, okay, your own objectives, but also have an understanding of the other side's objectives as well too. And when you do that, if you can get that established, more often than not, you can come to a conclusion and get a good deal. But in this case, this didn't work out that way. And you got to understand too, the Clippers in this instance, they've been around Paul George, with the exception of last season where he played 74 games in the regular season. I had it marked down. He played 56, 31, and 54 games in the regular season those 3 years prior. So that may be another reason, aside from just the tax, that they said, you know what, we don't want to give him 4 years for sure. because, you know, he's getting up there in age, and this three of his last 4 years, these are the amount of games he played in. So you got to take that into consideration as well, too. When you're paying that type of money, the best of ability, you've heard me say this before, is the availability. And he has not had that in recent times, unfortunately for him. So,
you know, you said earlier we don't have a crystal ball to look into, but do you think that if you're the Clippers, you regret not just trading Paul George straight up for James Harden instead of giving up a whole bunch of role players and a 2028 unprotected first round pick, 2 second round picks, and a 2029 pick swap, and an additional first round pick from the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Mo, you never live in regrets and what we should have done, could have done. It's always crystal clear then.
But do you think at the time when they were negotiating that trade for James Harden, there would have been a conversation with Paul George saying, are you committed to staying here? Because logically in my head, if you're going to make that trade for James Harden, you would have wanted to lock up Kawhi and Paul George before pulling the trigger on that deal.
My take on it is they probably, even though they weren't quote unquote close on a deal with Paul at that time, I would have to imagine, and I definitely believe this, that they felt that they would still be able to work it out with Paul George. I don't think that front office group there was thinking that we could lose Paul George because of what I was telling you earlier. They know he's an LA guy. He loves being there. That's home for him. And for him, the chance to finish his career out at home was a big thing for him. So I don't think that probably crossed their mind a lot to be giving up him for James Harden at that time. It was about adding James Harden to that group to try to win a title. And look, Mo, we said on this show, there was a stretch during the regular season that you, I, and BJ, we all had the Clippers. And when we did our top five list, maybe you didn't have them, but I know BJ and I had them in the top five in terms of how they were playing during the regular season together. They looked like a team that was poised to make a deep run in the playoffs. Now, a lot of things, obviously, we know happened negatively for them, but starting with Kawhi's injury going into the playoffs. So, that's how I look at it. I don't think that they would think, you know, could somebody have that conversation come up? Yeah, but my guess is that it was a passing thought more than anything because they were planning on being able to keep Paul George at home and no matter where the negotiations were at that time.
When you're doing these deals with players and you think Paul George wants to stay home because he's from LA and whatnot, how much of it is you're dealing with the agent and how much of it is you're talking to the players directly? And how much do you think agents interfere? Because obviously the bigger contract he gets, the more money the agent gets. So Paul George being from LA doesn't necessarily matter to his agent if he's just trying to get the biggest check possible. Mm-hmm. So how much do you balance speaking to the agent versus speaking to the player yourself?
Look, the player's in your building every day, obviously. So you have a relationship there with him. But you also, when you're getting into deeper contract issues, the guy has an agent. And that's what the agent's job is, to discuss those matters in detail. And you offer that agent that respect to be able to do that. I think your conversations with Paul are more that, like, hey, man, we're going to try to figure this thing out to keep you here. We want you here. You're just trying to reassure Paul in the short term how much he means to you and that you want to keep him, and you will keep trying to work that out. But my door was always open. If a player wanted to come and have even a deeper conversation about it, and again, I don't know all that transpired out there, was always open to that. And if I had that type of a deeper conversation, I would quickly get on the phone with his agent and share that with his agent. Hey, your guy came in, wanted to talk about this. This is what we discussed today, because what you don't want is varying messages being happening. I'm a firm believer in everybody being on the same page, especially through these negotiations, because a lot can get lost if I'm having one separate conversation over here with the agent and then a different conversation with the player, and then things get confused. No, whatever's being said in relation to that, whether it's one-on-one, in a group setting, whatever, I want to make sure that we're all together and clear of what was said, where we stand, and hey, if we can agree to disagree on stuff, we'll work through that. And if we agree on stuff, great. But that's, to me, how you got to handle these type of negotiations.
So let's finish just by talking about the basketball side of things again. Let's look at the Clippers roster. They've got James Harden, Terrence Mann, Derrick Jones Jr., Kawhi Leonard, and Ivica Zubac as their starting five. And they've got Russell Westbrook, Norman Powell, Amir Coffey, Nick Batum, and Mo Bamba kind of as their bench unit.
Say that starting five again, Mo.
James Harden, Terrence Mann, Derrick Jones Jr., Kawhi Leonard, and Ivica Zubac.
Got it. Okay.
Do you see this as a play-in team? Do you see this as a top six team? Where are you kind of pitching this Clippers side ahead of the season?
It starts with Kawhi Leonard.
Yep.
if Kawhi Leonard can play 75 games, you know, like Paul George played 74 last year. If Kawhi Leonard can play 75 games, yeah, this is a team that
should be a top 18. Well, he got 68 games last year, 52 games the year before, zero the year before that, 52 before that, 57, 60. So if we kind of average out that he's going to play, let's say 58, 59 games for this team, you no longer have the luxury of having Paul George to kind of pick up the slack. He's been replaced by Derrick Jones Jr. How do you kind of view this team?
No, it's going, like I said, if he's not, if you're going to go by the average, I have concerns for this team. Look, you're talking the Western Conference in no particular order right now, but Dallas, Denver, OKC, Minnesota. I think most people probably would have those.
And don't forget healthy Memphis.
I'm getting ready to get there.
That's okay.
I'm getting ready to get Memphis. Now, you know, with Ja Morant coming back, there's five right there. There's five teams right there that, to me, would clearly be ahead of them. And then the rest of the group that you have fighting it out will be, you know, the Golden States of the world, the Lakers.
Phoenix, Houston, Pelicans. And Sacramento, we talked about them.
Sacramento, all these teams on the rise. So like we went for five because I'm putting Memphis back up there some because I just think that Ja is that type of impact for that ball club and he impacts winning like that. Look.
Like aside from the Jazz, the Spurs, and the Trailblazers, we can look at those other 12 teams in the West, all competing for eight playoff spots. There's going to be five teams that have tried to make moves to get better who don't make it to the postseason, which is going to be interesting. And I think the Clippers, if Kawhi Leonard plays a lot of games in the regular season, it may not even be worth it because he'll more likely than not be injured by the time the postseason gets here if they do qualify.
Well, you're done. If you do, you're done. I'd rather have him healthy and get there. And if for some reason he can't go, but at least we got back there. The competitive nature of this thing, you always are trying, you know, you're trying to do your best to win. You're not trying to play games with, you know, okay, we can sit him out these games and hopefully we'll be good enough to get there. No, when you're talking about building a culture, Mo, and you've heard me say this all the time, man, the expectation is, man, we want guys playing, man. We want guys competing day in, day out, night in, night out to become not only a playoff team, but eventually a championship team. So that's what I look for, and that's what I want.
If you had to make a prediction now for the Sixers of how far they're going to go, do you see them reaching the conference finals, the NBA finals? Obviously, a lot of it is luck and injuries and all these other factors that play into it. But right now, if we have the Celtics as the top dog of the Eastern Conference, as they were for the past 12 months, you've got the Knicks, you've got the Bucks, who haven't made any moves. And we'll talk about them in another episode because they've not made any moves, but they now get the luxury of having a whole season with the same head coach and he can implement his system properly. And Dame and Giannis are going to have more time to get acclimated together. So you've got the Milwaukee Bucks there lurking. So where are you ranking this Sixers team?
I'm going to rank the Sixers in third behind Boston and the Knicks. I'd put Philadelphia in third, and I would put Milwaukee probably in the fourth spot right now.
I might put then, Cleveland there.
I was going next. I was going with Cleveland. I was going to say Cleveland. I like, you know, they got a new coach. you got stability now with Donovan Mitchell being there, extending for three more seasons. You'll get a healthy Jared Allen back. I anticipate Evan Mobley making a step, getting better. So I like the Cleveland team. So, no, they could be one for sure. And Orlando did some nice things this offseason, too. Mm-hmm. Don't sleep on Orlando Magic. I really like the KCP signing. And I expect guys like Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero.
And the Eastern Conference finalists, the Pacers as well.
Yes, and I didn't even brought up the Pacers. And the Pacers, now they have stability with Pascal Siakam, you know, committing to him. And, you know, they have some confidence having gone to the Eastern Conference Final. You got a young group like that in Hungary. So it's not a gimme for the Sixers because, again, just like I said with the Clippers, so much is going to depend on the health of Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming if he's playing 65 games plus, I think that they're good enough to, again, solidify themselves in that third spot and be right. They're pushing the Knicks as well.
Man, I'm already excited for the season to begin. We got to watch Embiid play in the Olympics first, you know, for the USA. Who would have thought?
Well, I tell you what, I'm sure we talked about them both here today, but if you're the Clippers organization and you're the Sixers organization, you've got your fingers crossed and, you know, that your guys come out healthy.
Well, that's the Warriors told Canada that they can't have Andrew Wiggins for the Olympics because of health reasons, which I don't know whether that's leverage and whatever goes on behind the scenes over there in Golden State. But it's interesting that those two guys are playing and hopefully they do stay healthy. But let us know in the Discord server who you want us to talk about tomorrow, which move of the offseason, because there has been a lot of moves and we're going to continue to break them down. So get involved. Let us know who you want to hear us talk about and give you the insights on. Scott, I appreciate you as always.
I appreciate you, my man, Mo.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Make sure you subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts from. And most importantly, until next time, get buckets.